The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Hey everybody, another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. Today we're going to be discussing a kung fu classic, 1966 Come Drink With Me, directed by King Hu. And Basil's going to kick us off with a little bit of plot description. Basil?
Yeah, fortunately this movie has like a super simple plot, so I'll keep it very brief. At the very beginning of the movie, the son of a governor in China is being escorted, and he gets ambushed and kidnapped by bandits, and they want to exchange him for their leader, who's being held by the father. And then the governor's daughter comes to rescue him, and that's pretty much the whole plot of the movie. Other people help and or hinder her quest, but it's really not that complicated.
I know, you. What did you
think? I liked this movie a lot. The only thing I knew about it was that it was a Chinese kung fu classic. That was the only prior information I had about it. And it was nice to kind of, like, within the first couple of scenes, it turns out that the main hero is a female martial artist, which was kind of cool. I liked that already, and then it turned out to be like really interestingly made, like very ballet type kung fu rather than like, I don't know, whatever, breaking bones kind of kung fu, like very the fighting looked like dancing, and that I liked that a lot. And it like the operatic elements I loved too. And just the fact that like a woman and a drunk are this movie's main protagonists, mm-hmm. and how well that worked together, I really like that. I thought the ending was really abrupt, but it just kind of ended without tying up too many loose knots, I felt like, but I didn't mind. So yeah, I definitely like this movie a lot.
I love this movie. In particular, I loved the widescreen, and I think it's the most widescreen kung fu movie that I've ever seen. And like how they used it for like really big battles, I'd never sort of seen a kung fu movie look like that, and it was really gorgeous. And I also thought it was really well structured. I'll talk about that a little more later, but I don't think I've ever mentioned this on the podcast, but I really care and love structure, like narrative structure, like how the scenes are laid out and how the story is sort of pieced together in that way. And it's one of the reasons why Akira Kurosawa is one of my favorite directors, is his structure is so inventive in his best films. But yeah, I'm jazzed about the structure of this movie and to talk about it. And next we've got... Michael is going to be filling in for Patrick today, so we've got a special guest host. If you just want to say hello.
Hello, Michael. What you thought of it. First time, long time. I like the movie, but with some qualifications, I guess. It was good, but it's definitely not my favorite martial arts movie I've seen. Like, the plot was, as Ruben said, I liked the plot quite a bit. The fighting was pretty good, but it was not as well choreographed as some of the later ones I've seen, and it was kind of a little choppy in parts, so that kind of took away from my enjoyment a little bit. But we can talk about that a little bit more later, I guess.
Well, you're the last one to go, so if you want to just kick it off.
Oh, okay.
Basil was the last one.
Oh, Basil's the last one. Sorry. All right, never mind. Basil, go.
I mean, I'm with everyone else. I really like this movie a lot. I would say that I agree with Michael, but that it didn't bother me that much. I was like, this is probably my favorite action movie that I've ever seen where I don't actually like the action parts that much. But, yeah, I agree with Ruben also that, like, the structure was really nice and, like, that the... I liked how straightforward the plot was, like the fact that they set up the initial conflict and then they don't really feel the need to like excessively complicate it, or like, I feel like a lot of kung fu movies that I've seen, they get impatient with the story and like keep introducing a bunch of new extraneous elements to kind of just like keep the plot going because they can't figure out a way to like make the initial plot compelling enough to like justify an hour and a half movie, and I thought this movie took its time with that in a really neat way.
I would say not just kung fu movies, but almost all action movies in general tend to have like far too convoluted plots, since they're mostly just about punching and kicking.
For sure. I also thought this movie was really beautiful. I agree with what Ruben said. And if you like the scopiness, you should definitely watch other Shaw Brothers movies, because they all use widescreen pretty nicely. Although I think this one is probably the best looking one of the ones I've seen. There's so many shots where I was just like, this is a beautiful shot. And just like, not even that necessarily pertinent to the story. Like, there's one shot pretty early on where it's like night, and she's walking through a bar that she's been in earlier in the movie, and it's empty, and all the chairs are up on the tables, and somehow like that shot just seemed like sort of plaintive and sad, and it combined with the music in a really interesting way where I was like, this doesn't seem like it should be a shot I care as much about as I do, given its placement in the story, but I'm just super into this shot right now.
Yeah, I definitely am more excited to see A Touch of Zen than I was before, although I was still excited to see it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the Shaw Brothers, but it's the same director.
Yeah, I think it's after he left the Shaw studio that he made it, but I'm very excited to see it also.
That's a good movie.
And we got some approval from Michael on that one. So I guess I'll just talk about the structure a little bit then. There's a little bit of a silence there. Yeah. But I was like, you know, it's not just so much that like the narrative like moves straight forward, but that sort of in every scene, like, I kind of know what's going on and where things are sometimes before even people talk, and like each setting is established in a way that it's like I'm really clear of like the players and like the rules of engagement, I guess, of things. You know, like it starts off and there's like the transport. Oh, everyone's frozen for me, but I'll just keep talking. It's like a transport of people, and then like a guy appears on a cliff, and I'm like, okay, there's gonna be a fight. And then there's a fight. And then they're like, the next scene is they're torturing the guy that they kidnapped or whatever. And they're like, we should be fine as long as Golden Swallow doesn't appear up. And I'm like, all right, Golden Swallow is going to be in the very next scene. And then there she is, as you know, someone walks in and they're carrying themselves completely differently from everybody else in the scene. And I'm like, all right, that's Golden Swallow. Right? And it was like every scene was like that, where I was just like, I know like everything that's going on, everything that I need to know. My only complaint about the structure would be Ilya's, which is that it does kind of like, it's building up to this big fight between the drunkard and the monk, who both of them are I guess a continuing theme of like not being what you appear to be, because neither of them are that thing in a way. But that fight just like ends a bit too quickly for me. Although I think we talked about this before, because I said that about some other kung fu movie that I watched. because of Basil. Apparently that's like a running tradition in Kung Fu. It's just like, it's like ending.
Right.
It's something actually, that I... sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I actually thought it was going to end the scene before, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. They, like, don't have to fight each other. He can just let him go, and then that could be the end. But then they have the extra scene where he killed him, and I was like, oh, okay, never mind. Because I was going to say, that would be, like, a really crazy ending for a movie, because usually it does what the movie ends up doing, which is, like, the bad guy pretends to give up and then tries to ambush the hero later, and I thought for a second that the movie was just gonna end, and I was like, oh, that's cool. Sometimes you can just, like, let the bad guy go if they give up.
Yeah, what I meant by the abruptness is actually also the relationship between I have to, like, Golden Swallow and the drunkard,
drunk cat.
Yeah, because I felt like the movie had been kind of building a relationship between them in a really interesting kind of way. That was kind of always based on, like, misconceptions and, like, them both not understanding each other really well. And then kind of Drunk Cat kind of, like, taking on this savior role or whatever. And then, like, and then that just kind of went nowhere. Like, they were starting to make it out to be, like, a relationship of some kind. And then, or a friendship or something. And they just kind of... they don't even talk to each other at the end. Like, there's just, like, she just leaves at some point, and he stays behind, and that's, like, okay, all right. So I guess that's it for them.
Right.
I guess I'm kind of conditioned to believe that there has to be some follow-up there, but then there just wasn't, and I don't know how, I don't know whether or not that that was good or bad for the movie. I just know that, to me, I was kind of expecting for that relationship to somehow have, like, an ending of some kind, or, like, a continuation of some kind, and it didn't. And that was surprising to me.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
I don't know if it would have made sense, though, for those two characters to have an ongoing relationship, just because she's, like, the daughter of the governor, I think, and he's just some drunken, wandering sort of
good
guy.
I would say that the mistake is actually, sorry,
I was just gonna say, I don't think that would have made a lot of sense in, like,
yeah,
that society at that time for her to be actually associating with him in any way. So it, yeah, but it could have used a little bit more of a
you drive the van next time.
Yeah. Needed a little bit more of a bow tied around it, maybe.
Like a goodbye scene, like, I have to go back to being the governor's daughter, and you have to go back to wandering the country. Goodbye forever.
Have fun living in poverty.
What I'm referencing is in Wet Hot American Summer, when, like, it's a really dumb scene where the guy, like, saves the kids from, like, the rafting thing, then the other guy who was with him, the other counselor, is like, hey, next time I drive the van or whatever. And it's like, and then they, like, laugh, and it's like a real clear mockery of, like, that type of scene where it just, like, wraps everything up, even though it doesn't make any sense. So that's what I call those scenes, is like, you drive the van scene. Yeah, so I agree with you, although, and I'm with Michael, too. I think the problem is that it starts to develop a relationship, not that it finishes it. I think they should have just, like, not even started to, like, develop anything. I liked that character best, Drunk Cat, when he seemed like sort of like a trickster spirit, like, almost not real in a way. Like, he just, like, appears, and he's just, like, sitting there. And he's, like, waiting for her to get to him. And then he, like, disappears. And, like, a lot of the time when he's fighting, unlike the other people, like, you don't even really get to see him do anything. It's kind of like he's moving too fast, even for the camera to catch him. Which I liked.
Yeah, like, when in that scene at the temple when he's helping her out, he, like, is, like, flicking her sword to her to catch it. And everyone's like, where did that sword come from?
Magic.
Yeah, I was going to say that that was actually, structurally, that was actually kind of my only complaint with the movie, is that it felt like for the main fight to be the fight between the monk and Drunk Cat, they should have introduced that character, like, sooner. Yeah. He kind of appears, like, in the very last third of the movie, and then instead of, like, what you think you're going to get, which is the fight between Golden Swallow and, like, the white-faced, like, apparition
Sleep
guy.
Face is what they call
Snake
him.
Face. Yeah, instead of the fight between those two, which seems like it's going to be the climax of the movie, we ended up with a different climax that's kind of introduced pretty late to be the main thing.
Yeah, I felt that same way, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't really care about that monk relationship between those two. And for that to be like the last fight kind of also, to me, felt weird. I would have rather spent more time with Golden Swallow doing whatever, actually. Like, I kind of felt like she got short-shrifted in the end.
Yeah, I thought she was going to get trained.
Yeah.
After he saved her, I thought she was going to get trained to fight the whole battle.
Drunk fight style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was,
but
that
I guess that's probably just based off of the fact that Drunken Master is like the first Kung Fu movie that I watched, and so therefore every movie ends up getting compared to that one.
I just
a lot
really
of those
enjoyed
the training montage.
Yeah, right. No, I just really enjoyed all the scenes to do with Golden Swallow a lot. So I wouldn't have minded if Drunk Cat was less of an important character in this movie, because I liked her the most. I just like watching her move and even or not move. I like watching her sit even. Like, there was some really amazing tension that she just exuded by just, and a presence that she exuded just by being on screen. And the way she just looked, turned her head and, like, made, like, these jagged movements was, like, really intense. And what I actually, like, going to a point that some of you made earlier about the fighting, like, that Michael made earlier, that the fighting wasn't that good, that was kind of choppy. I felt like the best part of all the fights was these silences before the fight started. Was like this moment where everyone is just like in this room and the camera is showing like all the positioning of everything and how they're like, how Golden Swallow is moving from like looking at one opponent and looking at the other opponent and kind of getting ready. And it's like the silence is like drawn out. And I felt like that was really, really great. And like it never lived up to that ever, pretty much. But like, it was so well done. Like, like the movie had such a good grasp on like playing with tension and release. I felt like every time that a fight was about to start, I was really excited, even though I knew that, like, really quickly realized that none of those fights are going to be that great looking. But just how they were presented and how they were like anticipated, I felt like that was really great.
It reminded me a lot of like Western movies from the States, or maybe like a samurai movie from Japan or something. The slow sort of build up before just the carnage begins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that reminded me a little bit, like not as well handled, but of like Yojimbo, where like there's a whole most of that movie is just like the tension before the fights, and then whenever he fights, he just like kills the guys really quickly, which I thought was disappointing the very first time I saw it, because I'd been used to like long swashbuckling like fencing type fights. But then I was like, oh wait, it's because that's the way to show how badass a fighter he is that when the fighting finally starts, he just kills them all really quickly.
Yeah, just to clarify, I liked the fights. It's not like I thought that they were badly made. I thought a lot of them I enjoyed a lot. They were just, I just felt like that anticipation was just so, it's like with Jaws and how when you see the shark, it's obviously less cool than how it was like anticipated to be. You know, like it will never live up to all that.
Although I like the shark in Jaws. Every time people say that, I'm like, I thought the shark was cool. Like that part when he's throwing the stuff in the water and then all of a sudden the shark just jumps.
That part
out
is great, yeah.
It freaks me out every time
I
watch it.
Yeah, that's really freaky.
I like the shark too, but I don't think it's scary. I like it. I'm like, oh, cool, a shark. Like that's a,
or the alien, like, and aliens.
Right.
I think the alien, and aliens is scary as crap looking. I would say that the anticipation and release there are matched in terms of intensity.
Yeah.
When that alien appears, I'm like, ah, what is that?
How can a thing even look like this?
Yeah, R.I.P. H.R. Geiger at this point, I guess.
Yeah, R.I.P. Someone pour out a 40.
Yeah. I have a bottle of Nestle Pure Life water.
I got some tea over here.
All right, that's some money we can count on. Someone call up Nestle.
They got plenty of cash.
Delicious.
What I say that, like, the shark doesn't live up to the beginning, now that we're talking about Jaws for some reason, it's that, like, it's not a horror movie shark, if that makes any sense. Like, to me, it's like, I really like Jaws, if you want to call the shark that, and, like, the last third of the movie.
Jaws the,
like,
shark.
I'm like, I like it as a character, the Jaws shark,
the shark.
And I'm like, oh, I kind of want him to live. He's no longer like a big scary thing anymore. I keep wanting to say I recognize Jaws's innate humanity, but Jaws is a shark, not a human.
Jaws the shark.
His innate sharkanity.
I love calling
his
him
innate
that.
Sharkanity.
Ruben, do you agree with what about the fights, that they kind of about the anticipation release there? Do you agree with this movie?
I agree that the part before, I'm with you, Ilya, the part before the fight is the best part and is really incredible. But I like the fights, I think, better than Michael. Like them, I still thought they were good. And I thought, for instance, the chasing across rooftops sequence between Drunk Cat and Golden Swallow was amazing, even though it's like kind of short. And it was like, just as someone who really loved Crouching Tiger and Dragon when they were younger, like it was just really exciting to see. Because I mean, I knew that it came from King Hu Films, like Ang Lee said that when he made
the actress,
but I still was like, wow, they did this, because that was like the most amazing thing in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I was like, I just figured that it would be like kind of a sloppy version of that
the actress
movie, and I was like, no, it really stood out as still like time tested good. Sorry, I keep
talking. Sorry. The actress who played Jade Fox in that movie is the actress who plays Golden Swallow in this movie. Actually, it's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I did not recognize her. Because she's much older in Tiger and Dragon.
Although I haven't seen Crouching Tiger in a really long time. This made me want to rewatch that too.
Probably, yeah.
What's interesting actually is I think it was Ilya mentioned that the fight scenes kind of reminded you of dancing. Was that?
Yeah.
She was actually, I think, trained as a ballerina prior to going into movies. And so I think that was kind of one of King Hu's reasons for choosing her. I think he wanted to kind of transfer that sense of dance to the martial arts sequences. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I definitely got that feeling. So, absolutely. Like, it was like a... Yeah, but, go ahead.
I was just going to say, but there were a couple parts where, like, during the fight at the temple, for example, where it got a little bit too much like dancing, because I think there was a part where the doors kind of swung open on the temple and people kind of pranced out. They kind of did like pliés out of the doors after her.
Man, I wrote that in my notes because I love that part. Like, the doors all open simultaneously. It's like five or six doors in a row that all open at the exact same time, and then a bunch of guys just jump out in this really happy way.
Like, oh, but cool, we're in West Side Story now.
Yeah, right.
Which is another awesome movie, so I'm good with
it. Yeah, I think the fighting never really seemed to like aim for any kind of realism. So in that sense, the dancing aspect of it kind of, for me, fit really well, because it never really seemed like there was any kind of, emphasis on it, like feeling or seeming realistic. Like, just the way that people jumped from one, the way they threw stuff, like, she caught things with her,
with her chopsticks or whatever, and how that happened. Like, there, I agree with Rum that there were, like, the rules of engagement were defined, but they were also pretty loose in some way. Like, they were also, like, she could do things that were, like, pretty out there that you you just kind of, I guess, just accepted when they happened, right? And then, like...
Yeah. Okay, so, like, what I mean by that is, like, so the scene you're talking about where they're, like, throwing stuff at her when she's in the bar, like, that's telling you, like, what her, like, level of powers are, right, and, like, what to expect when she starts fighting. So, like, it doesn't come out of nowhere, and then you're like, okay, like, and you also know just on the very base level that she's human, even in the world of Kung Fu. So, like, a poison dart will hurt her and stuff like that. Like... The really bad example that I think of recently of movies is Iron Man 3, where they, like, invent these super soldiers, and then they never explain what hurts or kills them, or, like, how strong they are compared to another human. And I'm just like, literally anything could happen in these fight sequences. Like, I have no idea if they're about to lose, if they're about to win. Like, I'm just like, whatever, I guess.
That's comic books, though. Like, people's power levels are variable depending on the situation, usually.
It's like over 9,000?
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's... Wolverine can, you know, his arm will heal from a broken bone in 2 days, or he can survive, like, a shotgun blast to the face or something. It totally changes. Anyways.
I agree with what Ruben said, that... And they did a good job of, like, foreshadowing different things, like the poison dart as, like, a thing that he even has recurs enough that, like, you know, and is handled in a really well way where, like, first he uses it on that, like, tiny child, which is horrible, and then...
Yeah.
And then so that, like, when he pulls out the fan against Golden Swallow, like, we know that it's, like, in trouble because he's really good with it. And then when Drunk Cat kind of, like, steals it later, I like that they made, like, his kind of, like, super secret weapon not just, like, a thing that he pulls out one time to, like, get the upper hand, but actually, like, part of his character that keeps recurring. I was also gonna say
Well, I was just gonna say about that character that when, like, he appeared, like, at first I thought that I was gonna not like that part about the movie because I was like, oh, he's, like, seems, like, traditionally feminine in a way, and he's, like, the bad guy, and there's, like, a long tradition, especially in movies, of, like, queering villains, I guess. Like, oh, right, they break the laws, like... Yeah. The laws of the world. They also break the laws of, like, gender expectations or something like that. But then when Golden Swallow appeared and she was the hero and she dressed and fought like a man in a number of ways, and I was like, okay, it's not about that at all. It's about people not being what they appear to be. So,
yeah, you know,
that guy appears frail, but he's actually their best fighter. You know, she looks like a man, but is actually a woman. The guy who looks like a drunkard is actually the best fighter. The guy who dresses like a monk is actually really evil, etc., etc. Right. So it ended up fitting the overall theme, and it wasn't about that at all. I was worried that it would be, because when that happens, like in another movie, Skyfall, I really hate that stuff.
Yeah.
Where they make it like such... But they, yeah, in that movie, they also make it such a big point that his... queerness is, like, part of his evilness, and that's, like, the most disgusting aspect of that movie. I felt like that. I had the same sort of thought process while that was happening. Like, I actually kind of reminded myself when I started thinking about it that, well, no, a movie in which a woman is, like, one of the main characters and also, like, but dresses like a man, like, that is probably aware enough to not just say something like, oh, well, this guy acts feminine, so he's evil. Like, that would be too simplistic for it. I had the same sort of thoughts about
that. For some reason, I didn't even pick up on it, just because I thought that, like, his, like, dressed in whiteness and, like, the white makeup was more just like associated with white being kind of like a funeral color in China. So he's just like, I don't know, I thought of him more as like a deathly apparition type character than even really noticing.
It was the fan for me, and the way that he used the fan.
Hmm.
That's what made me think they were categorizing him as feminine.
I think a lot of people use fans in China, though.
Yeah, but the
it's
way
hot
that
there.
He used it.
It is hot.
Yeah, to me it was the makeup, actually. Like, his makeup was really out there. His face was very made up.
Yeah.
Like, I guess that's what happens in China, too, sometimes. But I feel like he was the... Like, his makeup was way crazier than everyone else's. So, like, that was pretty obvious. As, a, like, a...
His
yeah,
makeup
his, like...
was kind of... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. I thought you were asking about his makeup, and that's why I was about to start explaining what I meant.
Oh, I was just going to say his makeup was kind of reminiscent of sort of more theatrical productions that they might do in China. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it was kind of intended as an homage to that, because a lot of the movie was kind of reminiscent of sort of Chinese stage plays with the sort of musical interludes, and the actual music itself, like the soundtrack, was like Chinese theater music. It wasn't actually like soundtrack music, so to speak.
Yeah.
It was a lot of the movie was very drawn from that tradition, so I don't know if it was intentional to just to have recognizable characters who are like, this guy's the villain because he's wearing the makeup and everything.
Yeah, I was going to mention, drawing on the idea of the music, like, that I thought that the music and the sound design in this movie was really fantastic. Like, one of my problems, even with a lot of kung fu movies that I like, is that the sound is, like, too obvious. Like, they'll, like, really hammer in the sound effects. Like, sometimes in boxing scenes, like, there's, like, a sound effect for when they miss and a sound effect for when they hit people that are, like, two different. So it's, like, whoosh, boom, whoosh, boom, and, like... that the fighting was really very scaled back in terms of how hard it wanted to hit you with the sound. I really, really liked, and the music also being really subtle but affecting me a lot emotionally.
Yeah, me too.
Felt
I liked the music a lot. Like, we had in one of the early podcasts when we were discussing Iria, like that was like a thing where the soundtrack was so bad that it just made me dislike everything that the movie was doing even more. And here, that scene where she is she's coming back to her place after Drunk Cat woke her up, and like she kind of saw that these three villains were like trying to kidnap her or whatever, but it didn't work out, and she like kind of goes back to bed. And the music that plays during that scene is really, really good, really great. Like, I felt like there's a couple of those scenes where, like, it's a song that is sung is later picked up, like, the melody of that song is later picked up by the music. It's really well done. And I just love that sort of music, too. Like, I just respond to that kind of, to those instruments and those melodies really strongly.
Yeah. I was going to say, this is the first movie I've seen in a really long time where I was like, I wonder if I could download the soundtrack somewhere. I would listen to that.
One of the repeated songs that's just kind of like, I think it's just like a drum, but it's like a drum with a tone or something. Like, it's not completely just rhythmic. It's also, it's like, dum, dum. You guys know the one that I'm talking about? It plays before a lot of the fight scenes. Later when... Drunk Cat has Golden Swallow at his like cabin in the woods, and he's like helping repair her from the poison and like take care of her after the fight that she would have lost without Drunk Cat's help. He's doing like something, and like he hits something and it makes that sound, like it's almost the exact same sound. Did you guys notice that?
I missed it
because it seemed
to be like a timbal or something, like
I'm not good with instruments.
Yeah.
One time when I was writing a paper about Unforgiven, I asked a friend who was a musician, like, if they could come in and name the instrument at the beginning so that I could mention it in my paper. And he was like, that's a guitar. So
pretty good.
And I was like, oh, does it sound like a guitar? And he was like, yeah, that's a guitar.
Yeah, but I know the sound you mean, though. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I liked the way that the sound effect came back, and it like made like sort of like rippled the idea that like every time you hear that sound, like Drunk Cat is there or near, because the first time you hear it is like right when he gets his hand caught in mm-hmm. the door. It's like. Yeah.
I wanted to ask Michael, since you said that like you felt like that the fight scenes didn't really work for you, like and you said you mentioned mm-hmm. that they were choppy, where does like just generally you felt that way, or were like just some scenes that didn't work for you, or just like all of them didn't really?
Not all of them, but each scene I think had little problems for yeah. me. Like, an example of something that bothered me would be when Drunk Cat is taking care of Golden Swallow at his cabin, and those, I think it's Wu, comes yeah. to, with the guys to ambush them. And then, you know, there's kind of a close-up on Drunk Cat, and he kind of does some hand-wavy movements, and then they zoom back out, and everybody's falling down, and the guy's got a spear through his gut.
Yeah.
You know, like, there just wasn't that sense of continuous movement that you might see in later movies, which is kind of, for me, what the most attractive part about martial arts movies, actually seeing the martial arts.
What?
Yeah, I agree with that. There are other earlier sequences where Golden Swallow does a similar thing, where it's like kind of a close-up on her, and she's like whirring around, and then all of a sudden it cuts back and all the guys get like knocked back away from
yeah,
her. And
yeah.
That there are certain points, even aside from those, where it kind of feels like each cut is starting a new action. There's not really kind of a continuity of movement between cuts. It didn't bother me too much, especially once I got used to it, but having come from, again, like Michael, later Shaw Brothers movies that use a lot of longer takes to kind of create a continuity of movement and an escalation of like tension within the fight, that there wasn't quite that same tension in this movie.
Right.
Made the fight less exciting.
You can definitely tell that this is one of their first efforts at this like new style of kung fu movie, mm-hmm. because they actually didn't start using like the wires and trampolines and stuff until I think their next King Hu movie, which was, I think, Dragon Gate Inn, I think.
Nice.
And that was kind of where...
Is it just called Dragon Inn?
I think it's Dragon Gate Inn.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think
Sorry.
No. Yeah, you go ahead.
There's going to be another one of those arguments about something that's a fact, right? That's pretty good.
Probably.
Either way, that movie was where they started using wires and trampolines and stuff, which is where you sort of get the style that kind of progressed, you know, up to like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, all that sort of stuff. So I think it's interesting, though, to see where it all started. And then if you continue watching through the years, you can see how it sort of progressed, and you get it more of a sense of the history, and you can kind of see how the whole genre developed.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys think of at the end, like, I guess the blood, like, content of the film, like, went like 15 times higher in just like that last scene? Like, there was very little like sort of overt violence in a way, and then at the end when he kills the monk guy, when Drunk Cat kills the monk, there's like blood everywhere, like so much blood that he has to wipe his eyes in order to keep himself from like being killed so he can dodge the last move of the monk. What did you guys think of that?
I mean, I thought it was interesting. I thought that fight sequence would work a lot better if it had built up in a way that I felt was more satisfying, because I thought that there was also like something cool about his acting, that like when he finally wins, there's like a he seems sad. He seems like genuinely sad that he like killed a person, which is like there's like the blood kind of gives it a more real feel almost compared to any of the fighting before that, and then I thought that that was a nice way to kind of like make it feel like a real thing, and that give it like kind of weight and consequence that Drunk Cat wasn't taking the fight lightly, that he regretted that it had come to this conclusion. I don't know if you had any specific hopes for the conversation as far as like blood.
No, I mean, like, it was impactful to me because the film had so little blood before that. Yeah. And then there was, like, you know, Riccio levels of blood.
Yeah. I felt like the scene with the with the toxin, where he sucks out the toxin, was pretty graphic in the sense of, like, the, that wound just being shown as this gaping pus-infested wound.
Fair.
Like that. And that scene actually had, like, that affected me a lot when he asked her whether or not it was okay if he could suck out the blood, because
yeah, that was kind of nice.
That was really cool. Like, I felt like there was something amazing about like asking, because like you're unsure if this is like a thing that you should or shouldn't do.
He respects her as a woman.
I felt like really cool.
Yeah, I also thought that there was like an easy way where that could have been very sexualized, with him kind of like sucking on her chest, mm-hmm. and the fact that when he pulls away, it just like spurts all this blood, like totally takes any
yes.
potential sexiness out of it. And I was like, that's a cool
thing. And he even spits a couple of times.
I still thought it was sexy.
Yeah, he spits a couple of
sort of like
yeah.
I was just gonna say it's like a David Cronenberg movie. All of a
sudden. Yeah, right. Like, he keeps spitting for, like, 3 or 4 times after that. He's just, like, it's just, like, just so we, like ridding it of its potential sexiness. He's just, like, slobbering everywhere.
Yeah.
There was a fair amount of gore in other parts of the movie, though, wasn't there? Like, I remember in the first fight scene when the bandits attack the caravan or whatever you want to call it.
I mean, people get like arrows to
that guy cuts off the one guy's hand and then holds
yeah,
it
he
up
does
and
cut
he's
off his
staring
hand.
At it like, yes.
Yeah, that's at the very beginning, right?
Really, it was
yeah.
More, yeah.
Yeah.
Really,
like
more
the
specifically,
first 2 minutes
it was like
or so.
The excessivity of blood, yeah. and it was like the full, like a full body's worth of blood
right.
just
right.
everywhere.
Yeah, like, and his face is just kind of drenched in it, that, that definitely
yeah, and he really
me.
Draws attention to it by like cut, like he has to like wipe
yeah.
the blood off of his face.
Right.
Fair enough.
From his eyes.
There was
yeah.
also
yeah.
just like the way it was shot was much more dark and like with like the very red lighting. I thought that
yeah.
also did a good job of like giving it a much more kind of almost nightmare-y quality to the fight, which. Again, gave it some weight that I wasn't expecting it to have, considering I wasn't that emotionally invested in their rivalry previous to that.
Yeah, they introduced the monk character kind of late in order for us to like think that it was like pretty important.
Yeah. They did mention him earlier in the movie. The older monk had said, oh, the master's away, he'll be back in a few days. But...
Yeah, I remember like, that, and I for some reason I thought that it was going to turn out that like Drunk Cat was the master, but this resolution makes sense too.
And I like that you never really see the bandit leader, like except from the head up in that little cart.
Yeah, man, that seems like such a crappy way to be like dragged around. Like a whole cage is way better than.
Yeah, I felt in a way that it was really kind of funny, like because like this, like you probably maybe even would imagine that this leader would play some kind of role in this movie, and that he just never does because like he just stays in this wagon all the entire time, and then just when they're about to free him, he doesn't get free. Then just has to like kind of just gets carried
rolls back
down
the hill.
Yeah.
That part was really funny when he just like kicks the cart down the hill.
I love Gary Busey
so
and Bulletproof.
Oh, I can't believe I almost forgot to mention this, that the hat she wears at the end of this movie could be another great hat for our moments in
oh,
hat
yes.
history of cinema.
Yeah. cinematic hats throughout history.
This is a recent thing, Michael. Like, we've just started it.
Okay. Yeah, it just got brought up the other day, yesterday. But
what was the not Cary Grant one you mentioned?
Female
Was,
Scorpion.
Miss Scorpion.
Yeah. Female prisoner Scorpion.
And I also like the way that, like, the front of the bill gets cut off, and there's, like, a series of scenes of everyone getting ready to fight, and her getting ready is just, like, rip the bill the rest of the way off and throw it away.
That happens to a few people, I think. I think it happens to, yeah, the number three, the smiling guy, smiley face. Yeah. Yeah. He gets his hat cut in the tavern.
And a lot of the villains scene. Were smiling in this movie. Like, apparently smiling is something villains do.
It's another way that they are not what they appear.
They think seem friendly. They're so good.
Going back to the bar scene, I was going to mention earlier, and I forgot, that the end of the bar was, like, really, really... I mean, like, the way that was all set up where, like, everyone's just kind of hanging out, and she goes in to get drinks, and, like, then it turns out that almost all the patrons are, like, bandits, but not all of them. So, like, when it slowly, like, reveals that each one and, like, other people who aren't bandits start to run away, I thought that was a really cool use of tension, like Ilya was talking about, that it drew it out for a really long time and, like, was very satisfying.
Yeah. And I guess, like, I was wondering whether or not, like, the fact that they're fighting in these, like, serene places, like temples and that place where the end fight happens is where Drunk Cat lives, right? That little secluded little house that
has. A beautiful set.
It was such a beautiful set. It kind of like it reminded me of the just because like that's one of the one of the first kung fu movies like I watched was Kill Bill, the first volume or whatever. That the ending scene there between Lucy Liu and Uma Thurman, that they were like I felt like Tarantino had definitely like taken something from this movie over, and like the idea of like just having this really beautiful kind of set when this really beautiful garden in which like a really bloody fight happens was like a kind of typical kind of steel, and I felt like I love the fact that they put a fight there because I really like that set a lot, and I was hoping that they would show it one more time.
Sort of changing subjects, I thought it was really cool and kind of interesting that how often they like talk about going to fight. Like it seems like fighting is like this sort of there's like sort of this honorable like. We're not going to fight today, we'll fight in 3 days. And, even at the bar, they're, like, kind of having, like, drinks or something, like, or they're about to have drinks, and it just, like, it starts out as, like, well, maybe we can discuss this, and then there's nothing to discuss, so they have to fight. But I like the idea of making attempts at diplomacy first, and then it seems sort of, formalized, like this is the way people fight in this culture, is you talk about it and then you fight.
Yeah, there's a set order in which fighting happens. First you talk about it and then you fight, and then you talk about it some more.
It's true. It
first you
me
have
of
the
like...
conversation, then you do the kung fu. Then you have the kung fu master.
I also kind of felt like that's they kind of Kung Fu like the with the older monk guy that like they introduce him by like having him break stones in half with his fingers, and like he's like as this like invincible guy that is like never ever is going to be beaten by anyone, and then Drunk Cat just kind of beats him really quickly. Like it was really not that hard. It didn't seem like it was that hard for him even. Like, he beats him twice in a matter of, like... And then it's like, oh, this guy's not good. He's not that good. Like, it almost felt like...
But he does
like
break Golden Swallow's swords.
Right,
Yeah, but so does Drunk Cat, I think. Like, they keep breaking swords all the time.
Yeah.
That's just like a thing you learn as a Kung Fu master, is how to break stuff with your fingers really easily.
Giant rocks or swords.
Don't matter.
People.
Yeah. I want to be able to break a rock with my finger, just one finger, go pa.
Was it in this movie where one of the monks kind of like he like uses his hands to like unparalyze someone? Was it in this movie or was it in something else?
No,
it wasn't in the.
Like, no,
it's
in Crouching Tiger. And it's in, it wasn't something else that I watched for the podcast. I just can't remember now. But it doesn't matter. I guess maybe it was in. Yeah, no, I can't remember now. Like, I felt like that's like a typical thing that Kung Fu masters also do, is like paralyze and unparalyze people with their fingers.
It's a good skill.
If I could do any one Kung Fu thing, it would be the running around walls and jumping on rooftops. Like, if I couldn't fight anybody but could just run really fast around walls and rooftops, I would totally do that.
Basically do parkour.
Me too.
But better than parkour.
Flying parkour.
Also, real parkour, a bunch of people have died trying to be as good as that guy who created it, so it's not a great idea.
Really?
Well, I don't know if a bunch of people, but definitely people have like injured themselves, like, and like a few people I heard about have definitely died from like, you know, trying to jump from one building to another or something like that. It seems very easy for that to go horribly wrong.
Who would have thought?
Yeah. Does anyone have anything else to say about Come Drink With Me?
I think we're good.
No, I think I'm excited everyone else liked this movie.
Yeah, me too.
Because I was going to be real sad if I was the only one who was like, man, this movie's cool.
Nope, I thought it was super cool.
Yeah.
I think I liked it the most, actually.
It seems like it.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
I
liked it a lot too. Absolutely.
Sorry you couldn't watch it on the big TV. That's a stinker.
Yeah.
Because it's real beautiful.
Yeah. I started watching it on the big TV, and then it started like some sort of problem communicating between the computer and the TV.
Mm. How big is your big TV?
I don't know. But it's
big.
Nice.
Big.
It's nice. Joel likes his nice electronics. Nice. So,
shout out to Joel.
Yeah, I think this is the first mention on the podcast,
but hopefully not the last.
Stay tuned for more Joel news on the next podcast.
You remember that time that we talked about on the podcast whether or not there's somebody listening who's just like obsessively trying to figure out all of our relationships and like keeping these copious notes every time we mention a name?
Sort of like
who
one of those
are these people?
One of those charts that the police have detailing the criminal organization.
Right.
Yes.
It's like you just take notes
everywhere.
Yeah. like with The Wire, that they have like a board set up with like photos and like little notes stuck to next to the photos, like relationships between them.
One of my favorite things about those is that how similar they always are to the same serial killer wall. It's like the cop wall and the serial killer wall are separated only by like slightly more organization and like less, you know, like
the serial killer being more organized.
Well, organized in an insane way.
Maybe less creepy photos also.
Yeah.
Marginally.
I remember there was a Tumblr for a while that was called just like crazywall.tumblr.com. I don't know if it still exists, but it was just like collecting all the, like it dubbed them crazy walls and then like was collecting as many photos as they could of like, you know, reveal when it reveals and it's like this weird pattern that makes no sense to any person or just like strings across it with multiple colors. There was one TV show, I forget which one, where it had like in the first season like four different people had walls like that.
What if like a normal person for just like their 5-year plan did that instead of like typing it up on a computer. It's like BA in psychology, and then it's like a string PhD. Newspaper articles of like these schools they want to go to. Okay. I think Ilya needs to go, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, yay.
No one has
yay,
else
come
to
drink
say,
with
right?
me. Everyone loves
yeah.
it.
Welcome everyone, to the podcast, Michael. Yes.
Everyone recommends it. Thank you for
thank
helping
you.
Out, Michael.
No thank you, problem. Michael.
As
great
always,
to be
kung
here.
Fu expertise.
You know, and as always, if you enjoy the podcast, please go on iTunes and, you know, rent. Come Drink With Me, because it's a good movie and you should watch it. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
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 Bye.